For example, like she wouldn't put her goggles on. Like that was my trigger. Like, I don't know why, but I completely overreacted to the point where I basically picked her up and threw her in the pool. And talk about a shitty dad feeling at that point. And everybody's looking at you. You know, it's like, yeah, then the shame kicks in. And I call that the emotional hangover, at least for me, because that's what it felt like. It's like, oh man. And you know, it does, it really does suck, but I had to go and work through it and go, hey, it's okay. I got to breathe. I'm very triggered right now. That was not a common response.
No.
Dog barking, yelling at it, flipping out. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things that I think people listening to this show can relate to and go, you know, yeah, I can. I had, so there was this response.
And, yeah, that's just feedback. No shame, even though you feel shame, but it's just feedback like, wow, that doesn't match. And so I just want everybody to know that we can learn a whole bunch of coping skills that in the moment you won't be able to remember. And as soon as we can take it down a notch, then you will remember them.
Thank you for tuning in to the Critical Conversations podcast, brought to you by Mind the Frontline. Established in 2023 as a 501c3, Mind the Frontline is your ally in the journey to support those who selflessly safeguard our communities. Their core mission revolves around pioneering innovation in research, education, and overall well-being, specifically tailored to healthcare, military, and public service frontline first responders. The Critical Conversation podcast is a dedicated space for police, fire, EMS, allied health workers, dispatchers, air medical, and military personnel, along with their families. Here, we dive into the heart of the matter, tackling essential topics such as mental health strategies, recovery methods, treatment options, the latest research, and professional development opportunities. Before we dive into today's episode on Critical Conversations, we do want to, however, acknowledge the nature of our discussions. Some of the content discussed may be triggering or intense as we explore the challenges and the triumphs within the first responder community. We recognize that these discussions may evoke strong emotions or memories. If you or someone you know is struggling and needs immediate support, we urge you to reach out to your agency's mental health resources or your local peer support group. In time of mental health crisis, you can always contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline by phone or via text at 988. Please remember, you are never alone and help is always available. At Mind the Frontline, we are more than just a podcast. We are a community committed to fostering resilience within the entire first responder family. So whether you're on the front lines or supporting those who are, we invite you to subscribe, engage, and be a part of this vital mission. To learn more, please visit us at www.mindthefrontline.org. Now let's dive into today's Critical Conversation. Welcome back to Critical Conversations by Mind the Frontline, the podcast for first responders, listeners, and Mind the Frontline members. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing trauma therapy, and we are honored to have Cindy Jones as our guest speaker. With over 27 years as a mental health therapist specializing in treating trauma with individual families, agencies, and the community at large, she's a certified EMDR therapist and the former Southern Utah Regional Coordinator for EMDRIA. Cindy is also the co-owner of BiTAP, which is a regulation resource. She brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to our ongoing mission of fostering resilience within the first responder community. Without further ado, let's jump into today's episode and glean some valuable insights from Cindy. Welcome, Cindy. Thank you so much for making it on the Critical Conversations podcast, ma'am.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm honored.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, how did you get into trauma therapy specifically? I mean, 27 years is a long time to be in this field. You know, tell me a little bit, like, what drew you into it? You know, what have you been up to lately? And
sure. Well, back in the 90s, long time ago, when I was doing undergraduate work, I also was a medical social worker at the time. And so just imagine a 22 to 25 year old just dealing with pretty high end trauma as a social worker on that side, all the acute stuff that comes into the ER. And back then, they really didn't know how to help us know how to really manage our own well-being, and then we're trying to help families. It was pretty overwhelming. And then I went on to get my master's degree at the University of Utah. And then after that, I came back to Southern Utah, and I've been a trauma therapist ever since then. And I think just like first responders, I think you just grow in your ability to handle more and more complicated situations. And so I did that as well and began being able to work with first responders and their families and other people too in high distress. Because one of the things I learned with first responders is they can tell really quick if you can handle what they're talking about. And if you can't handle it, they'll dial it down. And they definitely deserve someone that can manage what they're saying and help them through that. And so I've just done my very best to stay on top of just being educated and being able to help them and help their families and communities in general in terms of early intervention after a trauma and a tragedy. And so that's pretty much been my focus for almost three decades.
And that's super admirable. You know, it takes a lot. And I love how you kind of put that, because, you know, I've had several therapists myself where I guess I did not ask him that question, like, you know, but you do, you see it in their face, you know, their body language, and it's like, you know, and they get wide eyed and you're like, okay, I'm going to dial it down. And then you don't end up sharing as much or trying to get off your chest. And so being a culturally competent, you know, therapist for first responders, I think is extremely important. And I do see a lot of therapists nowadays more frequently, along with like ketamine clinics and things like that, where they say they're first responder, you know, they'll take in, but they really just do not understand our culture, who we are, what makes us tick, and more importantly, like what we've been through over the cumulative trauma of our careers. Right. And so I think it's extremely valuable to have culturally competent therapists like you out there serving the communities of first responders and being a resource, you know. But when you talk about, you know, kind of getting out there and being in trauma, you know, I want to talk a little bit about like the window of tolerance and kind of lay the foundation for today's kind of talk. Can you kind of dive into that? You know, when you brought this up when we were doing the pre-show stuff, I was like, window of tolerance, that's something new, which is one of the things I love about doing these episodes. I've learned so much from the community. They're teaching me so much. But what is this window of tolerance? And can you kind of deep dive into it just a little bit so our viewers and our listeners can understand it a little bit more?
Sure. And I'd love to lay the foundation for that. And part of why I just want to say ahead of time is just a couple years ago, the lady that's the co-founder of the company BiTAP with me, her son-in-law was graduating from the police academy, and there's a whole group of, you know, men and women on that stage, and I went there because I'm a family friend and just so proud of all of them. And then in the back of my mind as a trauma therapist, I'm like, and every single one of them hopefully will be able to, you know, just navigate the acute stress and trauma that they're going to be exposed to continually. And so I'm hoping one day that the window of tolerance can just be taught clear back, like right when you're going through training, just so you have that working knowledge. So what it means is we all have an ability, like a threshold, to manage a certain level of stress. And so as long as we stay within that window, we actually do great. We can learn, we can engage in new learning, we can focus, we can manage our emotions. It's just that we just have that ability to function at our very best. And so then if you go up, start to go out of your window, that would be sympathetic activation. Some of you would say that's when you're triggered, upset, angry, and that's okay. We just don't want to stay heightened. And so if we do for too long, that's that dumping of stress hormones. And then that's when it gets really hard to remember any of those coping skills you've been taught. And so we want to be able to get back into that window as quick as we can. And I would say after a stressful call you've been on or a really traumatic event, everybody's going to go out of their window a little bit. But if it can just be at a manageable level, then you can get back. It's those high end, and then it's chronically that high end with all of the accumulative stress you're exposed to. And then if you stay up too long, your nervous system actually will drop below the window of tolerance and it'll go down, and it's called hypoarousal. So some people would say up is fight flight and then down would be freeze. And so we just want to help our nervous system recover back in that window as fast as we can. And I also think it's important for everyone to know that it changes. So if last night, let's just say I had a sick child, I was up most of the night, I'm going to have a more compromised window of tolerance. Or if I have a lot going on, it's going to go down. And so we want to make sure we know where we're at, because we want it to be a pretty healthy window so we can bounce back as fast as we can. If we can spend most of our time there, then we're going to actually function at our best.
No, I love that analogy, because as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about my own personal trauma that I've been through in my career. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, it does. It definitely spikes and gets above. I can relate, because you get that fight or flight. At least for me, it was sometimes I can get up there and,
you know, I give it some time and it'll come back around, you know. And this is before I actually had any good coping techniques or I can deal with stressors. But then I think towards the tail end, right before I hit my Sentinel event, like I was riding that up, you know, almost 24/7. Like it just didn't seem like it went away at all. And that just kind of, and then there's times where, you know, I just freeze, you know, and I just froze up and I just like, you know, and I kind of attribute it to maybe depression or just like not knowing how to respond. And it's just like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do right now. Like other than my autonomic system is just breathing for me right now and keeping me alive. But other than that, it was just, and you see that fear, you see that froze and that freeze in some individuals, especially after trauma. And so as you're talking about this, like I'm able to, you know, relate to it in my own trauma and how I've kind of responded to it. And yeah, I like that window of tolerance because everybody does have like a good window of tolerance, you know, whether we talk about, you know, tolerances on aircrafts and things like that, you know, everybody, everything has a tolerance, but when we get stressed at and we get put out tied that tolerance, it's important to get back within those normal limits as soon as we possibly can. And, you know, having some of those, you know, ways to cope with those, some of these stressors and understanding that, what are some things like within the emotional tolerance that you typically see in first responders? You know, do you see that they are typically responding to the upper end of that and staying kind of over revved and hyperstimulated? Or do you see that eventually transition over into that freeze, or is there a good balance? You know, just so we can share with viewers so that way they can self-reflect on themselves.
I would say I see both. So just know the freeze would mean maybe in the moment, if we just want to make it about, let's just make it about animals for a second. So you're never going to see a gazelle try to fight like a cheetah. They're going to run. Like our nervous system quickly assesses fight, flight, freeze. And so if someone freezes, I just want everybody to know, because I work with a lot of victims of trauma, their nervous system made that decision for them in a split second. So it wasn't a cognitive decision. And I think that's really important for people to know, like that fight, flight, freeze, it's a lower part of your brain. It's not your thinking brain, and it's taking over to try to help you. And so if people are up, so if it's just a flat out trigger, most of you know, it would be your heart rate's going fast, you're feeling panicky, maybe sweaty, you can't think clearly. But it also lower levels, I would say, maybe when you go home, you're irritable, quick to get angry, easily frustrated, that kind of stuff. And then when you drop down, so freeze would mean freeze, like a rabbit freezes, but then it hops away and recovers. Us, we are literally the only species to sit in our stress. And so we want to talk about that too. But the blue, you can call it hypoarousal. It just means just kind of starting to check out. You would know that you, if you're coming home from work, which happens a lot after hard calls, and you really don't want to engage with your family or your friends, you want to kind of isolate. That's what that lower level stuff is. That's kind of like burnout too. And so if you just don't have the energy and you're not bouncing back, you're probably, no one goes from like that green window of tolerance down to blue. You always go up and then you drop down. So if we can learn how to catch it on the up and get back into green, then we won't spend as much time down here where maybe we're burned out, where that would mean just not as productive, we're not getting our paperwork done, and we're not that engaged outside of our work life either. And a lot of the first responders I work with definitely don't want to impact their families, but they do. And so I actually see a lot of the family members too.
Yeah, trauma knows trauma, and it definitely takes a toll on our families, our my kids, my wife, you know, my parents, even my good friends. I think they've all kind of seen some changes, you know, with me recovering, which is great. You know, obviously that's what we look for. But I can relate to that. I can relate to coming home and being very agitated, very short. And then there's also times where I would come home and I would just withdraw and I would isolate and I wouldn't want to go to any social functions and I still struggle with that today. And I don't know if that's just leftover response, you know, where I just like, you know, it's like, oh, I don't want to go engage with all these people. You know, I just want to kind of be withdrawn. But I typically, like most people know me as an outgoing guy. Like if you see me at a conference, I'm always chipper. Like if I'm in my space, I'm in my space and I'm thriving.
Right.
But then there's times where it's like, I just don't want to talk to anybody. There'll be times like where I get so, I think, hyper aroused with like social media, for example, and to the point where I don't even want to pick up my phone because I don't want to look at it. I don't want to see all the comments or any of the notifications or what's going on. I just want to shut down and withdraw. And so I can very much relate to what you're saying.
Red would be the hyper arousal. And so when you start to feel overwhelmed and then you drop down to where you don't want to respond, just to even know that, like I'm overwhelmed, and then just know it's true for me, it's true for everybody, it's true for your family members, it's true for teachers, just any profession. Dropping down is just your body's way to try to cope. So see, we're either going to find healthy ways to recover, or our nervous system's going to find ways to help us on its own, because it has to. So whether that's healthy or unhealthy, so we just want to help it, because I think you coming home tired, I think that's normal after a hard call. I don't think that's a problem. I think it becomes a problem if it's several, you know what I mean, days in a row, then we have a different problem.
Then it's not so much burnout and stuff like that. It's really it's starting to set itself in. But I mean, you made a good point there, you know, when you being aware, you know, and that's one of the missions behind Mind the Frontline. What we try to do with these podcasts is really just kind of make people aware, because I've had people call our peer support or a debrief hotline afterwards, just because they became aware of like, oh man, I listened to this, and they started self-reflecting like, oh yeah, this is kind of me, you know? And so, being that it's okay. And I, at least for me, when I hit that red stage, you know, I think I could say to assume that most people that hit the hyper arousal, the red stage, you know, eventually you're going to have a blue stage to try to recover and try to bring it back into that window of tolerance. But I like how you kind of mentioned, coping techniques, because my coping technique when I was up in the red was alcohol and negative self-thought. And so that really brought me to, I would feel like a hyper low blue state, you know, almost like chilling to the point where, and some people do have that, you know, because as I've been and spent more time in mental health with first responders, I've seen that a lot of us just haven't been armed with some of those coping techniques, you know. And I like also how you mentioned, you know, so I would like to talk a little bit about like, yeah, what are some good coping techniques, but also like, you know, how do we widen that window so it's a little bit more tolerant, right? Because some people come into this profession and they just don't have that tolerance built in. They have a very narrow tolerance, right? Which means, hey, I don't have much of a range here. Anything will kind of set me outside of my range, versus if I can continue to learn tools on how to widen that window of tolerance, and then I can hopefully take on a little bit more. And so it's not such a big shift all the time.
I'd love to talk about the coping techniques. But one of the things I would just say is, if you chronically are struggling with just, you're just having a very small window, I would just encourage you, if you were open to it, to, you know, possibly talk to a therapist. And so I did not learn EMDR therapy until about, I'd have to count the years, but probably maybe 15, 16, 17 years into my practice. And so, and that's because when I was in graduate school, EMDR therapy wasn't even 10 years old yet. And so it just didn't have all the research behind it. So it wasn't taught like it is today. But I know for a fact that you can learn all the coping skills in the world, but if you're dysregulated, you won't use them, and you actually can't. And that's only because the more stressed you get, the more your executive functioning or your thinking brain, it just shuts down, because you've got a different system wanting to jump in the driver's seat. So what I've learned over the years, one, I absolutely value therapy for sure. But in the moment, whether you're in therapy or not, you've got to have skills to regulate your nervous system first. And then once you can take that edge off in a healthy way, then all the other skills you've been taught, you can actually then operationalize. And so to me, that's probably been the biggest shift I've made, is really a strong focus on nervous system regulation, just because I can see how beneficial it is in the moment. Because even Chris, if you, let's just say you had an appointment with me next week, but you're triggered like tonight, like you've got to, you might be able to remember to breathe, and you might remember some of the things, but like, just even last year.
There's days that I do, and I feel like I remember those. I'm like, all right, I'm aware.
It's probably a lower level. Yeah, good.
Yeah. And then there's days where I'm super overwhelmed, and I feel like I'm having a panic attack, and it's like, I don't even think about those tools. I don't even remember how to do the box breathing.
Exactly,
I don't. And then it's like, and then you stick up in this hyper, you know, and usually it takes me either calling my therapist or calling my sponsor or having a real good, my wife is like my biggest ally. Like she really does understand who I am and, you know, my emotional, you know, state sometimes. And so she can just check in with me. But I love how you kind of put this. I put this plug in every show that I do because I feel like it is just that important. But talking to a therapist, you know, there's a lot of individuals out there, and we're starting to collect a lot of data as far as our debrief hotline and the first responders that we touch within our community. But I still see, and I know this was my problem, a lot of us just don't have therapists. And then when we need them, like you're mentioning, like, hey, if you see me next week, that's great. You know, I mean, that's awesome, actually. But a lot of the responses I'm getting from the field is, I can't get into one for 6 weeks. You know, that seems to be about the average right now. And then they have to go wait 6 weeks, and they don't have these tools that we're talking about, and they're not really self-aware, and they're hyper-stimulated, or they're super, super down on the other end, and they're frozen, it's and true. They're staying in place and isolating. Mm-hmm. You know, what? And this is why I encourage people, try to find a therapist now that you can associate with, because what I have seen in my own struggles is, yes, I had to wait 3 weeks just to get into a therapist. And then after I finally got in with this therapist, the first one, you know, I start almost pouring my soul because I'm like, help me. I need to get this out, to the point where it just totally overwhelmed them, to the point where it's like, okay, this one's not going to work for me. So then you got to go back to the drawing board and try to find another one. Yeah. So I try to tell these people to try to get a therapist, even if you don't need to see them on the regular basis, you see them once a year or once a quarter or every other month, but just start now, because at some point you will need that lifeline and you want to be able to have that connection already pre-established and have the ability to call and say, hey, can you get me on your next available, and be able to work that out. Otherwise, you're going to be like one of these other individuals that, unfortunately, they're stuck in limbo. And, you know, we could provide as many resources as we want and throw them at them, but when they're in this limbo, sometimes it's really hard to get through.
Not gonna do it.
Mm-mm. Yep. And that's why I just like to make that plug. So if you are listening or you're watching this episode, I highly, highly encourage that you start reaching out and find a therapist that best works for you.
Yeah. Because even if I'm competent and know what I'm doing, if you don't like me, if the relationship's not there, it's not going to work. And if the relationship's there, but I'm not competent, then it might be a nice talking session, but you're not going to make the progress. So you have to find that balance of competency and connection so that you can really get the most out of it. And I always think it's better if you choose rather than your agency, you know, does the compulsory, you have to go once a year and they check off a box. But if we can change the culture to where you're choosing it for yourself, because all of you are in a profession where it's like, if it's raining outside, you're going to get wet. You're in a profession where you are going to be exposed. You already know this, to high trauma, and it cannot help but affect you. And I don't see the trauma as much. I hear it because I work with you and I work with other highly traumatized people, and it affects me. I sometimes need to talk to a therapist myself, because the cumulative buildup, it really is it's a true thing. So
it does. And so it all starts with the trigger. Right? There's something, a traumatic event, a trigger. So, you know, exploring on how trauma triggers impact first responders, I think is also a good way to, if you can be at least aware of it, right?
Yes.
You
know,
I
think when you look at,
if you know if it's a trigger, you're like, oh, okay, I know I'm being triggered. And it took me a lot of, at least I can name it and go, okay, I know what this is. And for those of you out there, whether you're in the medical, you know, it'd be like, hey, name that disease or name that symptom, you know, for the police officers and those in law enforcement, it's like, hey, name that charge, right? So, you know, if you're aware of it and you can really kind of put a face to it, it's for me, at least it's half the battle, because I know what it is, right? And at that point I can go, okay, I can start working through it. But I can tell you, for the longest time in my career, I had no idea I was being triggered when I was actually being triggered.
I believe that. And for me, a definition of trigger would just be when your reaction, it doesn't match the situation. And so I remember when I was presenting to a group of officers, an older officer was presenting with me. And so he shared this publicly, so it's not confidential, but he said they were seating at a dinner table and one of his kids dropped a vegetable on the floor, and he totally, it just snapped him into anger, and he was just flying at that kid. And he's just like, oh my gosh. So that seems like such a small thing, but it, that really wasn't it. It's just, that was just the tip of the iceberg. And so I think there's triggers in the moment. Obviously we understand, you know, if you're reminded of a trauma, a traumatic event or a tragedy, but him dropping a bean doesn't equal that. And so see, then me as a trauma therapist, we would set that up and just trace that back and be able to work through their roots and not just keep treating the symptoms. Cause I believe your nervous system can heal. And even if you have post-traumatic stress disorder, I personally have seen it, that you really can resolve it and you can heal. And I think everybody, myself included, deals with acute stress symptoms because of what we're exposed to on a pretty regular basis. So that's a normal thing, but we just want to make sure we can get back into green. And so the coping skills that I would talk about is, I think there's a wealth of information out there, but if teaching skills was enough, I'll just make it about New Year's resolutions, because we're at almost the end of February. And by now, 80% of the New Year's resolutions have failed. So it's not for lack of knowledge, because there's more knowledge.
I know this because my gym is starting to clear out in the morning, which is great. I'm like, yeah, finally I get a bench and I finally get my exercise machine back. But it's very common. You know, it's very common. And I like how you mentioned, like, the reaction doesn't meet the situation, you know, and this is one I'm not proud of, but I like to be very honest and transparent on these, on these shows. But, you know, last summer, for example, you know, and I'm still in recovery. So this thing, this still happens, people. Like, you don't just get better all of a sudden. It just all of a sudden goes away. It comes in waves, you know, it comes when you least expect it. But, you know, I was very anxious in the morning for my daughter's swim meet. And I don't know, you know, I go back and try to break it down a little bit, but for example, like, she wouldn't put her goggles on. Like, that was my trigger. Like, I don't know why, but I completely overreacted to the point where I basically picked her up and threw her in the pool. And talk about a shitty dad feeling at that point. And everybody's looking at you. You know, it's like, yeah, then the shame kicks in. And I call that the emotional hangover, at least for me, because that's what it felt like. It's like, oh man. And, you know, it does. It really does suck. But I had to go and work through it and go, hey, it's okay. I got to breathe. I'm very triggered right now. That was not a common response.
No.
Dog barking, yelling at it, flipping out. You know, there's a lot of things that I think people listening to this show can relate to and go, you know, yeah, I can, I had, so there was this response. And,
yeah. That's just feedback. No shame, even though you feel shame, but it's just feedback, like, wow, that doesn't match. And so I just want everybody to know that we can learn a whole bunch of coping skills that in the moment you won't be able to remember. And as soon as we can take it down a notch, then you will remember them. So the stuff that I teach first, and because I work with highly traumatized people, so an example would be like right after an accident or right after a tragedy, then I would work with the survivors, or, you know, just the people that were heavily involved or connected. So just very much in shock, very much in distress. And so I played with the order of this, and this order is the right order. So if you can tell you're starting to go up, like you're starting to get anxious or distressed, and we'll talk about what BiTAP is later, but you can just move your feet back and forth. You can wiggle your toes and just move your feet back and forth. Okay. Or you could go for a walk, because that's bilateral as well. And why that's first. Yeah. What were you going to say?
No, I had an aha moment, because typically when I am in that moment, like, and I can't regulate myself, and you know what always works for me? Going for a walk.
It does.
And now it makes sense, because now I'm doing, I just didn't put a walk, going for a walk, and bilateral simulation together. This is the first time I've done it. So once again, a light bulb goes off, but hopefully that light bulb went off for other people as well. I thought that was a really good relation, but
it's beautiful. And the reason it works is because our brain, so we have two hemispheres, and so we have one brain, but we have two hemispheres. And when things are calm, the two hemispheres just communicate back and forth all the time, just effortlessly. What happens, so this is the front part of your thinking brain, but if that amygdala gets triggered, it's like it wants to jump in the driver's seat. Well, if we really don't need it to be in the driver's seat, we want to calm it down. So the easiest way to calm it down is to introduce bilateral stimulation, and it automatically inhibits the amygdala. So if that's the stress response. So if you're in a stressful situation, which you are often, that sometimes you can't take a walk, but if you could wiggle your feet, but I do it all the time. If my office, if someone is upset, I promise you, I am moving my feet back and forth. They don't even see me doing it because it signals to your brain, this is stressful, but I'm safe. Like, your brain has to register safety. So that's the number one thing I teach. The second thing I teach is movement. So if you can't go for a walk, it's fine. But even if you could just shrug your shoulders or move your head, that matters. And that I would do that. And then the next thing I would do is I would take a drink of water or drink of something. If you don't have that, put in a piece of gum. If you don't have that, just swallow. So if you'll do those three things first, it actually, your nervous system just automatically starts to calm down. And then you're going to remember to do the breathing and the other things you've been taught. Because if you don't calm it down, you're going to hang out in hyper arousal or that red zone longer than you want to or need to. So those are the
Nobody likes being up there. Yeah, nobody likes being up there. But review those three things real quick. So, you know, bilateral stimulation, whether it be walking, tapping your feet, going back and forth.
If you're at a desk, like, just pretend you're testifying in court. So I'll pretend I am. Like, no one has to know, but I could have my hands on my thighs and I could just be tapping on my thighs back and forth. Because your brain, the lower part of your brain is actually the boss. And so our thinking brain is amazing unless we're dysregulated. So we want to keep our nervous system regulated so that your thinking brain actually can do its very best. So if you, we'll talk about tappers later that do the tapping for you, but just wiggle your toes or just tap them or tap on your thighs. If you can, you can even just do this, but you have to do it in a way. I know a lot of you won't do it. And so probably moving your feet in your shoes would probably be the easiest because it's not drawing attention to you. And then just a little bit of movement, because if I'm truly in danger, I'm going to probably freeze up a little bit, but to overcome it, even if I can just move just a little bit, you'll see athletes doing that before a high pressure situation. They're doing that on purpose to try to calm down because it signals to your brain, this is stressful, but I'm okay. And then swallow. So there's a lot of research that if you can swallow, you're going to activate, it's called the parasympathetic nervous system. So it's just a signal to your brain to start to calm down. And so those three things, boom, 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 you can do them really quick. So if I'm in my office, someone's distressed, I literally will tap my feet back and forth. And even if I've got, say, water in a cup, I have a water cooler in my office. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to actually go get a drink of water. Would you like one too? See, because that's giving me movement, drink of water, and then I'm in a much better place to stay regulated to help them. So I just did those three things like that, and they don't even know. But I'm going to teach everybody those same things because you know when you're going to get triggered, and everybody can do it every age. We teach all ages, schools, everybody. And there's a lot of people I work with test anxiety. And I remember talking to a fireman once, and he just said, the thing that's the hardest is we have people that could become firefighters, but they freeze in the test so they can't advance. And so it's just teaching. Yeah. Because the more upset you get, the less likely you can remember all the things you've studied. And so you want to be able to calm that down. And so these are the strategies that I teach every age, and college kids, professionals, everybody. It works for everybody.
No, it sounds like it does. It would work for anyone, but I love this because it's like the three-step recovery method. You know, it's like, hey, how can I three-step myself out of this hyper arousal and kick the amygdala out of my driver's seat so I can take control of my body again?
Because
you're right. Like, once the amygdala takes over, you lose control. You lose a lot of control and a lot of those choices that you want to make or decisions that you want to make, you know, whether it be responding to my daughter's not putting on her goggles for her swim, for example. Like, if I would have had that tool and I could have worked through that by, okay, I'm going to now tap. I'm now going to just walk down and have a conversation with her. And then I'm going to swallow before I get there. I can hopefully take control of that situation again. And I think that's where a lot of us go haywire with our reactions because we know the fight or flight response is a physiologic reaction that occurs naturally to any danger or threat.
In a nanosecond sometimes.
In a nanosecond. It just goes off and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, I don't have control. It's like having an autopilot that you hate take over the plane, right? It's like, you're crashing me right now. Like, I don't want to crash, but there's nothing you can kind of physically do about it until you can get back into that window of tolerance and then allow some of the other mechanisms to kind of take hold, at least for first responders and being in a high stress situation. We know that we get triggered responses, you know, all the time. I mean, early on in my career, it was like when the tones would drop every time. I'd be like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm new. I'm a new paramedic, yes. You know, a new firefighter going to my first house fire. Like, I remember the stress, but then I also remember going on my first fire, which makes sense now. It's like, okay, well, you're putting on your gear, so you're moving.
Yes.
I remember drinking some water because I knew I was going to be under my mask for a while.
Yes.
But all of this makes sense. But, you know, as we're doing this, our heart rate comes down. The fear and the anxiety start, you know, I'm not saying they're going to go away, but hopefully at least it gets to a point. You can manage it. You can actually listen to yourself. You know, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that, Cindy.
If you think about the people that you get called out on all of these traumas and tragedies, just think about the public. Like, can they, when you're trying to talk to them, like, can they really track? Can they really understand? A lot of them are just out of control because it's a trauma and it's the same thing. And I'm just saying, so it's just, even if you're like, well, I don't react that way. Okay. Then think about the people when you go out on calls and it's their loved ones standing off to the side, freaking out. It's the same thing. And so being able to just understand, that's why they can't follow directions in what you're saying. That's why when I work with people that sometimes see a horrible trauma, they can't even write the police report. They cannot make that happen. That's because that thinking brain is just shutting down. And so that's really what this is about. And how do we restore that thinking brain or getting back into our window just as quickly as we can? And I know that you guys are exposed to a lot of stress and not all of it's bad. You know, like maybe you're preparing for a presentation or something like that. It's still stress. Maybe it's good stress, but it still can take a toll on you. So you can use those techniques just even in your everyday stress. And then obviously when it goes higher too.
You know, and I think an important thing that you just said right there that also turned a light bulb on for me is the fact mm-hmm. that I can use this technique and help my patients or, yes. you know, yeah. the people that I contact, you know, whether I'm in law enforcement, if I'm a ski patroller, you know, animal control, a dispatcher, obviously you can help your partner out with this if you observe this. And I think that's where this is just another great tool, I think, that peer support responders and patient caregivers, physicians, nurses, everybody, you know, we get these patients that come in and we know they're hyper-stimulated and it could be for a myriad of reasons, obviously.
Right.
But if right. now that I have this tool, I could be like, hey, try this as I'm in the back mm-hmm. of the ambulance to try to get them to calm down. Hey, you want to, you know, a sip of water, you know, hey, yeah, just try that. Swallowing real quick. You know, mm-hmm. the only problem I think we would have is like the movement part, because I can't allow them to get out of the gurney while we're
you
moving.
You could just say, can you wiggle your toes?
Wiggle your toes. See that little
or
things
can
like
you
this.
Just move your fingers, like just
shake it
just
out. Tell my kids, you know, we need a little shake out.
Uh-huh. It actually matters a lot because we are the only species, like, you know, birds can get startled, but then they'll fly and rabbits might freeze, but then they hop away. We sit in our stress. So it's really important that we're conscious of this so that we're helping our nervous system recover over and over and over. Like, we don't have to wait until at the end of the shift, or we don't have to wait until our appointment. This is stuff you can do right in the moment. And it matters because you want to have gas in the tank when you go home. Like, you still want to have something left that you can give your family or your friends. And so being able to take care of your nervous system throughout the day is a really big deal, because I also know a lot of you guys don't sleep well. And so you can read all the sleep.
Yeah, we had a conversation the other day with the with the first responder. He's like, I just struggle with sleeping. And sleeping was always kind of, for me, I could fall asleep. It was just the intrusive nightmares that would violently wake me up. And that sucked. And then it's like, okay, after that, I couldn't go back to sleep. But once again, you just gave me, I mean, it's like almost life changing, you know, to learn something mm-hmm. like this. And being able to use this for other people and allow them to kind of learn about it as well. I think this is very helpful. And I like how you mentioned, like, you know, if you get off shift, you have a hard shift, a hard call, you know, take a minute to reset your reset your nervous system, like get it to reset real quick, you know, and that mm-hmm. could be before you leave the hospital. That could lead before you walk in the door and actually go into your house. For me, that's just some of my mornings. And that's why I have my own mental health routine, because sometimes I'll wake up and just feel so overwhelmed with all the stuff I need to do for the day and things like that. And the challenges I might have going on in my life. that right then and there might be a good opportunity to go, okay, well, I'm going to start my day with a nervous system reset. And that's awesome that we actually have the ability to do that.
Yes, takes even seconds. Once you figure out, I get it just automated, it's just super simple and anyone can do it at any time. And that's what I love. And then once you calm down a little bit, then you will remember to do your breathing. You'll remember the importance of sharing your feelings with someone, like connection, like you'll remember all that stuff that you've been taught, but you won't in a heightened moment. So you just want something quickly that you can do to take the edge off. And those three things will work very well. They do work very well. Because I play with that order in my office to see what calm people down the most. Because I'm dealing with people in, you know, shock and trauma, and I wanted to see. And so I know firsthand that's the right order. I've seen it over and over and over.
Well, I love it. I'm definitely going to put a challenge out for our community to try this. You know, go try this. I think it's an amazing thing. But this also is a health benefit, right? Because it brings down our cortisol levels, right? Yeah. If I'm able to reset, like my cortisol levels aren't just off the charts, which I know when we looked at mine after I went in for my Sentinel event, they were completely off the chart. They were quite amazed at how high my cortisol levels were. And I'm like, well, I don't even know how high they've been going for that long, because you just emotionally get burned out and you just start feeling emotionally numb, but you're just constantly in this hyper vigilant. And that's all I can describe it as. It's like, it's, you know, I have ADHD, but this is not ADHD. This is like ADHD on steroids. You know, it's just, you can't shut anything down, and any little thing, a pin dropping in the office would set me off, you know, and that's not a way that anybody wants to live. And so they start questioning themselves, like, I don't want to live with this, but they also feel like they can't fix this. And I do want to tell people, because I loved how you mentioned, yes, you absolutely can repair your brain. It's, science has shown that. We have proven that through science, that you can actually repair your brain through using a lot of these techniques that we talk about on these episodes. So,
you know, I think it's just another one. Neuroplasticity is real. And I've seen people 60s, 70s, 80s with high trauma, and you can heal. And so, and we'll talk about bilateral stimulation in a minute, but just the product. But I just want you to know, one of the reasons we created these Bluetooth tappers is because you can just put them in your socks or your pockets, and you just get the benefit of that tapping while you're in a stressful situation. And so that's the beauty of it, because then you don't have to think about it. See what I mean? Like, then it's just working in the background on your behalf. And so that's the beauty of having something do the bilateral tapping for you, because you would know, as you think about patients or just community members, if they're like in a panic state and you're trying to get them to voluntarily follow directions, they actually won't. But if they had access to bilateral tapping, they actually would calm down. So it's a piece of EMDR therapy, but bilateral stimulation existed, you know, since the earth began, because people have been crawling and walking and drumming and right. Like, yeah. So it's not EMDR therapy doesn't like own that, because it existed. Like, occupational therapists use it all the time. If kids are having, say, any kind of delay, developmental delay, they'll actually do specific, like jumping jack, just things, or just cross your knees, like touch with your hands. They're just doing all this stuff to get the left and right brain working together. So what we've done is just integrate what all the different disciplines know about bilateral, the importance of bilateral coordination between the brain. It's called interhemispheric communication, and just what that actually does. And it creates us functioning at our optimal level. And so you can do this outside of therapy. So in therapy, what we know, because I'm an EMDR therapist, the bilateral stimulation is inhibiting the amygdala, so you can reprocess the trauma. So we now know, because of all the advancements with neuroanatomy, we actually know specifically what the bilateral stimulation is doing. So that's important for all of us to know. And you can do it on your own, and you're not reprocessing trauma. You're just calming down the amygdala.
I love being able to now be a little bit more self-aware when I have that asshole driving my car. I hate to say that, but you know, it's like the guy road raging behind, you know, he's like, you're like, hey, get out of here, man. Like, I just want to chill, listen to my coffee house blues and, you know, enjoy it. But, you know, I've had to really work at that, you know, and that's taken some really good coping techniques. And I love how you kind of, you know, we've been walking, you know, since the dawn of, you know, the human species life.
Yes.
And I've never met anybody who has gone for a walk, you know, purposefully, and not felt good afterwards, right? Like, nobody goes like, oh, that was a terrible walk. Yeah, maybe the weather was bad or something like that. Right. But, you know, I think mentally, and that's why I love doing it. You know, on the days that I don't do my weights, I try to get out and I walk my dog in the morning, and I like it because it's very calm. It's still outside. Mm-hmm. My dog gets an actual benefit. Studies have shown that if you just leave your dogs outside in the backyard, they actually don't get the fulfillment and the same kind of needs that we do, because they want to go out and they want to be stimulated by smelling and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's the same with me. Like, I'm out there, this is my podcast, listening to Power of Meaning this morning, just like, this is a great way. And then I get home and my day just inherently starts better, you know. And I would encourage people, like, get out and try, like, walking is the easiest thing you guys can do on a daily basis for your mental health. And I can't tell you how many studies I've read in preparation for these podcasts where walking continues to come up. All the greats, you know, you look at Albert Einstein, all the great philosophers, they went back and looked, and they all walked regularly. You know, I think that's awesome. But what are some other coping strategies for managing this butthole driving my car, you know, and then getting that fight or flight response?
Chris, I know this is going to sound crazy, but the same things we just talked about, you can do in the car. So if with your steering wheel, I would just tap like your thumbs back and forth on the steering wheel. And I would just shrug your shoulders a little bit, because it's okay that you go up. Everybody goes up. Like, if you had a loud noise happen right now in your studio, you would jump. Like, that's normal. We just don't want to stay heightened. So it's okay if we go up, but we want to recover. So think of like an athlete in really good shape. Like, it's okay if their heart rate goes up, but they recover fast. The rest of us don't recover as fast. It's that. So, but if you're driving, someone upsets you, which happens to all of us because people drive the way they drive. So, but you can tap back and forth and you can shrug your shoulders. If you had a drink of water or something, just take a drink. And then I would take a deep breath and you'll find that you just took the edge off and it's okay. Like, you want to have tools right in the moment that you can use, and you can do that right in the moment. And we're actually, and
I love that.
Yeah.
I love being able to give our viewers and listeners, like, hey, here are some real tools you can take away right now. Because a lot of us that are probably listening or watching this episode are probably in some sort of state of hyper arousal. I can absolutely attest to that, because you just look at the statistics and the numbers.
So move, but you can also stretch. So just, you can move your, like, you can do certain, the movement, if you can voluntarily move, just know that signals to your thinking brain that it's still online and working. And I just want you to know that we're actually starting to do some work with airline pilots, and they have it bad because they can't be on medication, or they can't fly for a certain number of months. They also can't talk about their stress to the co-pilot because the black box records everything they say.
Everything you say.
So they have to be quiet. And so it's just such a difficult situation. And so these simple things are starting to go even to the pilot, so that they have tools like, how can I have help in the moment when I'm not okay? Because if I say I'm not okay, it just got recorded.
And that is, honestly, so what you just described is what is occurring right now in the air medical community.
Okay.
Because we have this thing called the IRIS, if you've never heard of it. It's basically like a medical helicopter black box. It actually records there's a little camera that is right over the pilot that records everything that is going on that dash. Along with that, it records everything that you're saying in that aircraft. And so I've even had people tell me, like, I don't feel safe debriefing a call afterwards, or even talking about a call. And now they're even more aware, you know, and I think not more aware, but just more anxious about what they even say. So we already have an anxious job. You know, you're getting called out to maybe go do a scene flight, to go pick up a burn patient, a little neonate. And you want to be able to talk, and maybe some of that talk is not patient related or call related. It's just, I'm trying to get stress off, right? I'm trying to allow this, and I just want to vent. And so that way, when I get to the scene or I get to the location, I'm just a little bit more functional and I can kind of put this away and focus on the business at hand. And I've heard of people reaching out to me and then saying, like, they don't feel comfortable even talking in the aircraft anymore. And some bases spend a good majority of their time in that aircraft and in that same kind of technology, which, you know, there's always technology. There's always the good and the bad that comes with it. Yeah. Okay. We can go back and we can see what happened and maybe cause that tragic event if it ends up having a malfunction or an air crash. But at the same time, it does take away a little bit of, man, so when am I going to talk about this? You know? And so people are having to adjust. And so I've been trying to tell them, like, the way I always did it, you know, not always, I shouldn't say always, that's a very broad term. But what I try to do in my practice is after every call and even before a call, because there's always the spin up period. There's always like, hey, before we actually crawl in the aircraft and hurry and go and meet our 10 minute liftoff time is, hey, let's talk as a team real quick. Hey, are you good? Are we good? What's going on? Where's the weather at? You know, and we would have these little things, but it just kind of brought the anxiety down a little bit more. And then after we would drop the patient off, before we'd actually go back out to the helicopter and do a lot of that stuff, typically most hospitals, you know, have an EMS break room. And even, good. I mean, we had a lot of good conversations just on the helipad where there's nobody else. It's usually just you, maybe a security officer, but they don't really try to stick around. And we would try to have like a little debrief and get back in the helicopter. That way it's like, hey, what went right? What went wrong? Hey, and we would check in with each other, right? Because it's like, hey, do we need to go out of service after this? You know, we wouldn't have these conversations because I got the Iris installed in one of my aircraft towards the end of my, not the end of my flight career, but my last hitch flying, which is almost 4 years ago. But yeah, these are things that I think new crew members are running into. And I'm seeing this now in ambulances, and there's crews that spend all day in the ambulance. And so you just need to create the event. You know, yes, I don't think technology is going to go away. They got to catch everything if they want to catch something. And it's not like a body camera where you can have the option to turn it on, because if we have a crash, we didn't have the opportunity to go, hey, I want to get out of this crash, right? So we have to work with technology and bring it to the forefront and go, hey, we got to adapt. So trying to make that time, hey, if you're in the ambulance all day, make a pit stop, you know, go stop by the gas station. You know,
the brakes, and when you're in the gas station,
do something,
because that's a clinical drive term.
By a park, get out,
co-regulation. So yes, all of that matters a lot, and so just being mindful to build it in a little bit, because you really can't stay in fifth gear all the time. You know, you just can't. So being conscious of helping it come down a little,
because either two things will happen, at least in my experience, is one, you will hit that and finally, hopefully start getting the help that you need because you just weren't aware of where you were at, or two, you will have that sentinel event that I almost had. And you know, we don't want that. We want those individuals to try to get that help. And I think having these tools that you're talking about, Cindy, which is just amazing, it's so enlightening.
And so simple.
This is so simple, right? It just sounds so simple. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, I just got to wiggle my feet, shrug my shoulders, tap my steering wheel, and I'm, you know, taking a deep breath.
I know it sounds too good to be true, but I just know that all we have to do is just think about, you know, if knowledge were enough, we'd be fine, right? There's so much knowledge out there now. And so really, it's just shifting to a focus on regulation first, and then you can access all that learning that you've had.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. So now, how can we overcome some of these stressors? We kind of talked a little bit about some coping strategies and techniques. Is there anything else you want to kind of cover in that regard as far as good healthy coping mechanisms? Because I know I didn't have good coping mechanisms until I really had to have someone either teach me, like my therapist. Once again, get a therapist if you don't have one. Anything else along that topic that you want to hit before we move on and talk about the stressors?
Sure. I just think that you're going to hear all the time the importance of sleep, but you are in a situation with your career where that's difficult. You're going to hear a lot that you need to exercise, but when you're tired and burned out, you don't want to exercise. So just know that the stuff that you've been taught, it's true. Like, sleep is one of the pillars of health, but I just want to make sure that we talk about how can you get healthy sleep? Because if you don't want to go to sleep, because that's when you start to think about the things you don't want to, like there was a major tragedy in a small community where I live that I helped with for this past year. And I couldn't sleep myself for the first couple of weeks, because if I'm working with the first responder that has to go over acute details with me, I wasn't there, but I feel like I was, right? Because I'm hearing it. So my brain's creating
that absorbing story. That energy.
Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't sleep either. And so we just want to acknowledge that that's a real thing. And just what can we do to make sure that we can sleep better? And that's where, again, I just want to just talk about, you know, we can go over it a little bit later, but the tappers, because you can actually wear or hold the tappers, say 30 minutes or 60 minutes before you go to sleep, and just have it slower. And it just signals to your brain just to start to settle down. And I actually wear them. I actually hold them every night before as I go to sleep, because I mean, I'm closing in on 28 years as a trauma therapist. So I've been exposed to a lot, but my sleep is back to normal. And so So I know there's a lot of sleep hygiene things you'll be taught, and those are great. If it's enough, wonderful. If not, then we just want to spend a little bit of time just talking about how you can use these Bluetooth tappers to just help your nervous system settle down. And it's just important. And I just know that you'll do the healthy things when your nervous system is back to that feeling regulated and calm. But if you're not able to operationalize any of the things you've been taught, it probably means you're just a little bit burned out, and that's okay. It's just information for you. But then that's for sure when we'd want to make sure you're getting a little bit of extra help.
I 100% couldn't agree with you more, because I know as I was going through my stuff, you know, I was not sleeping, but maybe 3 hours a night, if that, and it was broken sleep. You know, I just talked and had a conversation with my wife the other day, because literally I've been having more and more dreams. I didn't dream for, I want to say years. Like, I couldn't remember when I, you know, so the importance of sleep therapy, like when I was able to finally get good sleep. Now, first it took medication and pharmacology to really help me fall asleep and stay asleep. And then there's kind of the effects of that. But once I was able to, and this is people, this is like, honestly, you can repair your brain. You can get to a better spot. It takes time and it takes effort and energy, just like anything else. But a lot of this is not heavy lifting, but I can tell you that now I get a lot more restful sleep. I don't need to take any medication to go to sleep. You know, I have my own routine, and it does help, but getting good quality restful, you know, REM sleep, it does set yourself up to be able to, why I think it plays a good factor in widening that tolerance window.
I promise you know, because you it does.
Because when I get good sleep and I feel recharged, my brain feels recharged. It's not like hyperstimulated. It is. It's extremely restorative sleep. And so, yes, it does take some time to get there. And sometimes it's not very consistent. But the ones that I do get, man, it's just like, wow. And they just become more consistent. But I also like how you mentioned, you know, using the tapper device and allowing that to kind of tell my amygdala, hey, butthole, get out of the seat, man. I'm taking this thing back over and I want to go to sleep. But, you know, I also see the benefits of it, you know, because dispatchers are like the unsung heroes, because they are strapped to this chair, figuratively. And they have a lot of stimulation coming at them. They got multiple stressors. I got to run multiple screens and multiple radios. I got a helicopter landing. Like, I've been,
and people are way freaked out and in shock calling them.
They are. They're just shock calling them, and they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't know what the outcome is. All they can do, I really honestly, being an empath, I don't know if I could be a dispatcher. I have the utmost respect for what these individuals do and how they do it. But I also know that they are also forgotten of, and they also, like us, suffer. And so I do see the benefit of being able to use, you know, the tapper device, you know, the bilateral, even the three step that we talk about, but you know, to have that on throughout your entire shift, you know, where it's just like you mentioned, you have yours on right now.
They're so simple. Like, I have the pair I'm wearing, they just pair to your phone and you can find the settings, but they literally are just tapping back and forth. So it'd be like, if you were just tapping, it's just tapping for you. So the thing that I like about it for this population is it's just working in the background. Like, because you, like a dispatch officer, they have to like do their work. They can't stop and do this stuff. And so this is just working in the background. And so for all of you who've had children, just like when they're really little, like one and under, you can't reason with them. You just can't. So you just have to help calm them down. Think of that part of, that's kind of your nervous system. You can't reason with it. You just have to help it calm down. Then when it calms down, then your reasoning brain is back in the driver's seat. And this is such a simple way to do it. And,
But if I was a dispatcher, I would have to imagine, like, if I had this going on in the background, like, it widens my window of tolerance. Right. And it's just something that helps with the prolonged spikes. Right. Because I can hopefully reground myself after I hang up on this call and right before, you know, that momentary pause before I pick up the phone and take the next call. It's got to be extremely helpful, at least to buy them time to when they get off shift or take their break and they're able to get up and finally move around. Then when they get up and move around, once again, I would definitely go for a walk and take a deep breath.
Yes, I would too. And if you can't get up and walk in that moment, you could still stretch or shake your hands out. You still want to do something to just help your nervous system get those stress hormones moving, because you're just getting, there's just dumping. And then we sit in it. And it's exhausting. So if you're in red, you have no choice but to drop down into blue. And so whatever your stress patterns are, that maybe aren't so helpful. If you stay overwhelmed too long, you're just going to go to them. And that's just because your nervous system is trying to help you. So we're trying to help it recover quicker, so we don't have to go down to that deeper place where maybe people that struggle with addiction, or maybe someone's going to come home and they're going to game till 3 or 4 in the morning, rather than, you know what I mean? They're just struggling. And so we're just trying to.
And that's what I see, because they've been at red level, you know, at least in the dispatchers and the conversations I've been fortunate to have with them. You know, they describe exactly what you're saying. I'm in the red level for, you know, an 8-hour shift, a 10-hour shift, or a 12-hour shift.
So long.
And then it's like, okay, they either continue that because they're not able to come back down now. Mm-hmm. And they continue that right into the home, or they go to that crash and they go right to the blue. And it's like, they go home, they don't want to be with anyone, they're not a functional spouse, they don't, you know, and that's what we don't want to have. And so being able to help give you guys some of these preventive strategies and techniques to really, really make an impact in your life and what you guys are doing to improve your quality of life, to improve your health, your mental health, more importantly.
Marriage. Or your marriage,
which we understand those, especially in public safety, have a higher instance of divorce rates and struggle and, you know, substance abuse. All of that comes together. And I can attest to all of those. You know, I was separated from my wife. I was an alcoholic, like bad coping techniques, not a great husband, not a great dad, not a great friend. I was all of those. And it took a hard fall to really kind of give me that option of, okay, well, do I want to live? And if I do, how do I fix this? And asking for help. And so I really encourage individuals, like if some of this resounds and resonates with you, you know, ask for help. It's the freaking hardest thing you can do. But I can tell you that once you make that initial help, it gets a little bit easier. Hopefully you can land on some soft space and some safe places. And if anything, call Mind the Frontline. Like we have 17 trained peer support responders here waiting to have that conversation with you completely anonymously. But, you know, I know a lot of us are out there struggling and trying to overcome the stressors of triggers. And, you know, so what are, you know, 'cause life happens, right? Like we have work and we're in work mode. But that my problem was, is when I was in work mode, I didn't want to deal with life. I didn't have any more space to deal with life.
So just remember that window. If your capacity was maxed out. One thing I'll forget if I don't say this really quick, but when you talked about calling your peer support, I just want to say, I know sometimes people don't want to use their own peer support program for a variety of reasons. And I love that this is one that's separate. So you're still getting the support you need, but maybe feel that greater level of anonymity. And I just love that you're offering that. I think that's beautiful. And it's needed too.
Completely free. You know, it is. It's completely free. It's more, you know, and we call it a debrief hotline, right? It's not like a crisis hotline or anything. I call it a debrief hotline because I hope that, you know, once again, if we have these good techniques and we're doing them right, and we can finally get back down to a level of, okay, I can start really using my brain again. I've kicked out the amygdala out of the driver's seat and I've taken over, you know. Now I can hopefully pick up the phone and dial 866-MIND-24/7, super easy number to remember, and just talk. All we're here to do is listen and allow you that opportunity and that safe space. And it does, it creates another layer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, and a lot of departments are doing it well, some are not, but, you know, we run into the same stigma. A lot of people are struggling, they do not want to reach out internally. They could have a good peer support team, a very robust team, but not everybody is going to utilize that. And so what we see ourselves is just an augmentation. We are just here to provide another safety net, as you mean, below that one. And some departments don't have any. And so hopefully their safety net. And so, you know, I thank you very much for that. You know, and it's something that we provide at free of charge. Doesn't cost you a thing to take advantage of. And we even throw in one virtual peer support session if you want it. So if you really want to have that deeper connection and have a face-to-face conversation, because some people do, some people don't. Some people just want to call. Some people want to text. Some people want to Facebook message us. You know, we get a lot of inbound communication, but, you know, just know that we're here. We hear you.
Just
and
the
these
options.
Are all frontline. Yeah, the options are there. They're frontline trained first responders that are culturally competent. They do the job just like you. A lot of them have walked the same similar line. I'm not saying everybody's line is the same, but they parallel. There's parallels. So,
I love that you're doing that. I just know it's needed because if the choice is one, if there's no program, but two, if there is one, but I don't want to talk to that person for any number of reasons, then this is just a beautiful alternative. So I'm really glad you're doing it.
Well, thank you. It's just one of those things we're trying to do to help our culture and change culture, but also that, but I'm tired. I really am. I almost became a statistic. I had almost seven the first year of the pandemic become statistics, and it sucks. It really does. It's.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Very heavy. As one of my good friends, John von Rosenberg, you know, he mentioned he's, or not John von Rosenberg. Let me give credit where credit's due. This is Jim Green. You know, he runs the Mission Ready Foundation, but he's always, one of the things that always stuck with me is you can either choose to accept something or you can choose to do something. And, you know, this is just, I started it, but we have a lot of people and a great team behind me, and they're leading the pack. They really are, because they've chosen not to accept this anymore and they want to make a difference. And what I'm seeing is people are coming out all over the place wanting to try to make a change, and they just don't know how to do that. And so hopefully this just gives them one of many vehicles that are out there to help with that change, because my goal is to see the suicide rates in, amongst first responders for the first time in over 20 years actually hold steady and not double or even go beyond what it did the year before. That to me means, hey, we're actually making a difference and turning and winning the war on this battle, because it really is. It's a war.
It is. No, I have tremendous respect for you and just anyone that's in the military or first responder. That's like when I was at that graduation, you know, I just, like, I get teary right now, because you just know they're going to be paying a pretty high price pretty quickly. And if we can do anything to help, because what you're doing is so important, but there is a cost. And so we want to make sure we're helping every way we can.
Yeah. So. And we take care of our own too. You know, even our peer support responders that are on our calls, you know, we give them the option if they want to debrief the call with their chaplain or our team. So we take care of our own too. And that's important as well, because we do, we have, you know, stressors like this, we have life, and it's not going away. This conversation needs to be had more. And, you know, it's just having enlightening conversations like we're having right now, Cindy, that really do not only educate me, but hopefully educate thousands of people that will listen to this following this episode, because they just didn't know this. They weren't aware of it. And that's one of the things I did when I was teaching clinical medicine, is you don't know what you don't know. If you haven't been exposed to it, if you're not aware of it, because we think with our devices and social media and all this stuff, like, we're tuned into everything, but there is a lot of stuff we're just not tuned into. And that's where hopefully, you know, doing the mission that we do brings it to the forefront and really just kind of really just puts a spotlight on it. Because if anybody knows me, they know that I'm not going away. This is something that I have literally thrown a lot of resources at with good people, good resources, good systems and processes and good partnerships, you know, especially with BiTAP, you know. And so,
well, and you're the right person to lead the way, just because you're so passionate and you're someone, you know, on the inside. And I think that's beautiful. And I just wanted to say, like, whether it's debriefings or peer support or, you know, the critical incident stress management, all of it's good, but I do want you to know that the research says that, when you share, so a therapist would call that a trauma narrative. So when I'm sharing what happened, I'm sharing a trauma narrative. So just know, if we had like neural feedback on someone, that we would be able to tell how activated their amygdala is while they're sharing that story. So there's going to be activation. And so it's great to share, but there's a line that you can go too high, and then it's more like a reliving rather than beneficial. And so I've heard a lot of people in debriefings they've told me that they're triggered. They know what a trigger is now, but they're sitting in it because they don't want to draw extra attention to themselves. So they got all these stress hormones dumping. And so part of what we're trying to do is just tell them to put these in their pockets or socks, like, put them on before so you can take that edge off. And if you were a peer support team member and someone's telling you a hard story, if you handed them the tappers and they could just hold them while they talk to you, you will actually see that they're calmer and that they can actually flow, that story is going to flow better because they're not quite having that overactivation of the amygdala. So the amygdala thinks it's helping you even in telling a story. So you would probably know that, Chris, like, if you were sharing one of your hard stories, you might have like a physiological reaction a little bit. Has that ever happened?
Oh, I do. Like just now, yes. Like just sharing that, like I'm a little bit more sweaty. Yes. But guess what I'm doing? I'm tapping my teeth. Yeah. I'm swallowing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm actually using the tools I just learned, you know? Yes. But it does happen. I have, when I share, I have, you know, even mm-hmm. when I go lecture, there's that period of hyperstimulation, because it does come. Sometimes I'm able to regulate it and kind of prevent it, and sometimes it comes like a wave, and I have to decompress after some of these episodes. Yes. Just because it's deep. You're diving into a lot of things that are still there, and yes, every time I share, it gets easier and it gives it a little bit less power. But you know, yeah, if I had one of those tappers right now, like I would 100% they'd be in my socks too. Just give me an idea, like making a cell phone case that you could actually, you know, have them there, and you can just pull them out when you need them. They're readily mm-hmm. available.
Yeah, because I've heard in debriefings, even clear back when I worked at the hospital, you know, in my early 20s, long time ago, I was a part of that. And sometimes it's helpful, but sometimes I've had people say they heard stuff they didn't know, and it triggers them. Or I mean, just people have all different reactions. And so they're needed and they're important. And then we just need to make sure they just have an extra measure, an extra layer of regulation if needed, because you may not know that something someone says or doesn't say, or something that the facilitator says or doesn't say, like you just never know what's going to kind of tick you off or trigger you. And so just being able to know some of these simple things, that you're not drawing attention to yourself if you just took a drink of water, and just no one would even know you just helped yourself. And so just a little bit of those, just a few things like that, it really does help. And then if you don't have to have the tappers on, but if you did, they're just working in the background just to help you stay more fully engaged in what's going on. It's just important.
And you guys base by tap and the tappers based off of EMDR. So can we just kind of deep dive into that just real quick before we get into the actual tappers? So that way we can kind of show the evidence behind why this product works and why it's, you know, it could be a really good augment. You know, it's mm-hmm. another tool to have, especially for those of you who deal with stress on a daily basis and, you know, are looking for ways to help regulate this a little bit more. But what does the research say? Like EMDR didn't really just come out of nowhere. You mentioned when you were in school, it was still very new, but we know that now it is used in common practice, you know, all over the United States.
Yeah, actually all over the world now. With that tragedy, it was in Enoch, Utah last year. There were so many people impacted by that there is no way there was enough therapists. Like, there's just no way. And so being able to know the early intervention protocols to just run those that are now being done throughout the world, because in other countries, they don't have enough therapists. And so they had to find other ways to do EMDR. Well, now we're in that situation in America where there's actually not enough therapists because of the mental health crisis going on, you know, in the country, let alone, you know, in specific populations like yours. And so just know it's evidence-based. It's a beautiful therapy, but it's kind of like what you said earlier, someone can say they're an EMDR therapist, but are they a good one? So you just would want to make sure you vet them, and just make sure they don't have to be certified, but it just means they probably put in a little bit more time to be certified. Like if they put in that extra effort, it's kind of like, I just know that of the therapy I did before versus what I do now, I can have full confidence that I know I can help someone facilitate that healing, and they can actually recover. And that's a pretty cool thing, to not have a fear, just to know I can jump in and help. And it's how you feel, as you feel competent in what you do. And so I highly recommend that therapy. I'm sure there's other wonderful therapies, but I just was a seasoned therapist before I learned it, and then just could see how effective it was. And so I did everything I could to just bring that to Southern Utah and grow that so that we had enough therapists down here that could help. And so that's what we've done down here. But in therapy, I just want you to know, so bilateral stimulation. So sometimes it's eye movement, sometimes it's tapping on someone's knees or on top of their hands, or sometimes it's tactile back and forth. But sometimes people would come into my office and they'd be dysregulated, like in the red zone or hyperarousal, and you can't reprocess trauma when they're like that. And so I just started messing around with the tapping a little bit, and I just would with the old school tappers, just have them low and slow. And I could just see them just calm down over and over and over again. And that's before the research came out, because formal research on what bilateral stimulation does, formal, didn't come out till 2018. But then it was Haley that helped create them. She was like the office manager over like 8 therapists. And so it was my practice, but she's doing all the business side. And I was still doing a lot of therapy just because the needs were so high. And she's the one that just said, it's just not sustainable. Like, even if you see 30 people, Cindy, that's just the
way it works here, but you have to be in a controlled setting. I have to show up. I got to make a therapist, you know.
And I can see 30 people, but 500 need to get in. See what I mean? Like, it just, so it was actually her idea that still be a therapist, but what if we can Bluetooth this and just really give people a self-regulation tool, that because you can teach people to tap, I mean, and wiggle your toes and stuff, and that's really great. But if you're a first responder in a crisis, you're probably not going to remember. And you also aren't going to start tapping. Like, you're just not.
Yeah, I'll be start doing the Macarena on scene. People will be like, what is this guy doing? Like, he's got his flight helmet on. He's over there doing the Macarena.
It would help, but you would lose credibility. And
exactly.
So,
but having something like this where I could put in my pockets, or I could put in my socks or my boots, and it's just going on while I'm on scene, while I'm in the middle of this crisis. And it's helping my amygdala, because that's where the science behind bilateral stimulation came from. It's mainly able to shut down the amygdala during trauma therapy, daily living. It's just kind of, it's just taking it down a notch. And so if I'm able to get on a very, you know, complex scene, doesn't matter what line of work you're in, military as well, you know, it allows you the opportunity to not be up in that red zone, or at least regulate it to the point where you're not, you know, redlining. I hate, you know, I use that term, like, hey, if I get on scene, I'm redlining, I'm associating this trauma with previous trauma. And now I'm trying to do my job at the same time. And am I doing a good job? Am I saving this patient? Am I making a difference? Am I doing the right procedure? Am I doing the right protocol? Like, trust me, it is over freaking whelming. But if I had a mobile device that allowed me to help regulate that, you know, it just, I can't wait to get on my next call and try it myself, because I'm definitely peaked, you know, and I definitely want to do this.
It's beautiful. And when these came out, it was in to market, it was in 2017. It was right after the Las Vegas mass shooting. So in November 2017 is when these came out. So the month before was that shooting. And so because at that time I was the regional coordinator for the EMDR therapists, I took the lead on that, because a lot of our community members went to that concert and were highly traumatized. And so I was seeing them, but even people that didn't drink, they were drinking in between sessions because it was so bad. They were doing anything to just numb out. And so I just said to them, to a group of ladies individually, I just said, you know what? I'm giving these to you. I just want you to try them. See if it helps you calm down. If it doesn't, turn them off. If it does, great, tell me. And every single one of them came back and said they could sleep better, they could work again, they could recover from triggers. And so we went to the Las Vegas Victims of Crime Program, and they approved them for anyone that wanted them. And so that, right out of the gate, I learned quickly that it can help people in high acute stress. It just takes that down a notch. And so we've seen it over and over and over. On low end stuff, it would be after you've been on a stressful call, then somehow you're supposed to come back and write a report, but you're exhausted, right? Because you're in red dealing with that, but then you're exhausted, but you got
to
write.
Then you write a report having to relive it all over again. That's what I didn't like about some of them. I was like, so you know, I don't want to go back and remember every minute detail. What time I pushed this drug, what, you know, and sometimes you're just like, I'd rather just forget that ever happened. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like you're trying to come down, and then because I have to write a report, like it just puts you right back up, and it's like, it just deterred. And then all of a sudden, you know, the tones will drop and you're on to the next one. So you didn't even have time to come back down and take care of yourself. So having something like this, you look at like the brain's natural healing mechanisms, which is, this is what it kind of mimics. That's what I love about it. You know, there's a lot of good data out there for bilateral stimulation, or BLS. And so it calms the amygdala. It takes it down a notch. It allows me to.
You could do, Chris, there's now bilateral music, bilateral tones.
Biurnal,
it's all coming out.
I've used those with my AirPods with and this is another, I mean, if it's something that helps, all of it helps, you know, and that's why I like talking about what are the different things out there, because what I've learned in my recovery is not everything worked for me, and right. some things worked and then other things took the place of those. So I like to expose everybody in our community just, hey, whether it's methylene blue, psilocybin mushrooms, ayahuasca, you know, we did a mind meds and mushrooms episode last month or 2 months ago, you know, it's just to expose people to what they don't know and to right. find the option that might work best for you. But this is by far, I think, the only thing that I have found other than doing the Macarena that I can do while I'm just actively working and doing my job, because everything else, you know, ketamine, all of that requires me being off. You know, I can't, there's not a lot of mindfulness, there's coping techniques I can use, but there's not a lot that I'm aware of, at least for me in my practice, in my routine and what I go through, that I can utilize while I'm on the job doing what I need to do.
Yes. That's why we created them. And then we created them to tap rather than anything else, just because it just feels natural. And I just want you to know, I went to a fire station after a horrible tragedy in a community to work with them. And one of the gentlemen, he had them and he turned them up like 10 and 10, like that's fast and strong. So how fast and how strong on intensity? And he fell asleep mm-hmm. holding them. Like, he's just like, because he's so overwhelmed. And so it was so if so I soon had as it that on switch, that
stroke, like soon that inhibition happened, it was like brain shut down. He was asleep. I finally got that rest.
And if I had it that strong and that fast, it would be irritating. So that's another thing. It's there's an app and you find what you like. And if people are like, well, how do you know? I would just say, if we all went for a jog around the block, we know our pace pretty quick. And if it's mm-hmm. too fast or too strong, then it's bugging you. Then just turn it down. But at night, we don't want it fast and strong. So think about like rocking a baby. Like, you don't want to rock them. You're trying to calm them down. So then you just turn it down. And we have some people that say they know bilateral tones work, but at night, because they have some PTSD symptoms or PTSD, they don't want that sensory taken away. They want to hear. It actually heightens mm-hmm. it more. So that's where the tappers, you can still hear. And I love what you said. Not everything's going to work for everybody. We know exercise works, but if someone said you have to swim, well, then it's not going to work for me. I would rather hike or work out in the gym. But what I will say is bilateral stimulation does work. And so we just have to find which way works the best for you, because it is proven that bilateral coordination between the two hemispheres is how your brain works best. And so sometimes it just needs a little bit of help through tapping or walking to just help your brain work at its very best. And this is the simplest way to do it.
It really is. And the studies definitely have shown that with BLS, you know, you absolutely will reduce the symptoms of PTSD, anxiety, depression, just by calming that pissed off mm-hmm. amygdala. It just, you know, it takes the fear away. Stress
hormones. Yeah. Because if you keep having it, the goal is, how do I get back in my window as fast as I can? Because you don't want to have that dumping and then sit in it. And so it's just trying to just think of like a rainy day. The wipers just clear off the rain. We're just trying to just settle that down enough. And then, because you're all well-trained, so then you're going to work at your optimal level. And then off shift, you know, one of the gentlemen I worked with said he didn't even know he was affecting his family the way he was. He wasn't even aware. And when his wife finally was able to say, this is, you're really affecting us, how he was coming home, he said he was so sad, because he just said, everything I'm doing is for them. I never meant to, you know, bring that stress home and affect them. And so, but we do. And I also do work with families, because they're worried too when you guys go out on calls and they worry about you and the stress of that. And so we do the same type of teaching for the families too, and the wives or the partners.
Well, thank you so much for that information, Cindy. And really just thank you for what you guys are doing and being innovative and different holistic techniques to approach, you know, what is effectively killing our communities almost higher than anything else. You know, I'd also have to argue that by using your device at some point, maybe long-term, and, you know, maybe there's short-term benefit, but also you got to think about like, what are the downstream effects? You know, I know what cardiovascular disease, my risk of stroke is because of my cortisol levels. And so if I'm able to have and utilize, you know, your product or BiTAP or, you know, good breathing techniques, good coping techniques, whatever that might look like, just also understand like you're reducing other effects that you just can't see right now.
That's right.
Like cardiovascular disease, like stroke, and suicide. You know, those are the three biggest things that I think are killing our profession right now, with suicide almost running away from the pack. And hopefully we can take that opportunity. But Cindy, how can people find out more information about BiTAP and, you know, how it might be applicable to them? Where would they go to find that information?
So if you think of the word bilateral tapping and then just shorten it, so B-I and then hyphen T-A-P-P.com. And if you go to the top, well, actually on the front page even, and you scroll down to the middle, you'll see a first responder video. He did a beautiful job. And there's a tab where it says see the uses, and we have another first responder. He uses them when he testifies in court. We have investigators wearing them themselves when they're investigating, when they're asking questions, because they know they've got to stay in their window and do a good job. And so it's a lot of pressure on them. And so there's just a lot of different ways you can use them. But they are allowed in court. And I think that's pretty cool. And so you can go to that website to learn more about them. And we actually have them in schools and colleges. And so sometimes, you know, maybe it's your children or your partner that might be struggling with anxiety, and they can use it too. And so it's really for all ages. We have definitely found that out. It's even little preschool kids are using them.
Yeah, I definitely want to try these when I get them, and I'm looking forward to it, because I work with my own son. You know, when he gets overwhelmed and gets really stressed, you know, they just want to, you know, cry inconsolably. And so, you know, I have to work with breathing and helping him kind of slow himself down.
I think he would do it if he was, but if he was a 10, so just say 0 to 10, if you ask him to breathe, he'll say no, right?
Yeah, but, yeah. Most of them are like, I can't.
I'm going to hold my breath. Yeah, but if you just push the, if he knew when really he was calm to use the tappers and they just start tapping back and forth, he'll actually just calm down pretty easy on his own. And then he will take deep breaths with you and do the other stuff that also works. So just think of this as taking off the edge or keeping someone in their window if they know they're going into a stressful situation.
Well, it's nice. It's a tool that can be used by everybody in the family, you know, so why not?
Because everyone's
why
brain not works at least the try same. It? Yeah.
They really do, you know, and we know that this works. And so being able to use it. So no, I appreciate it. For the listeners and the viewers, we will drop a link to BiTAP.com in the show notes. So just go to the show notes, make sure you guys leave a review, and more importantly, make sure you subscribe and share so that way we can get the word out. Cindy, any last closing conversation, any last thoughts that you have about today's episode? Once again, thank you so much for being a guest. Information you've provided is just super enlightening. Like, I can't even tell you.
Well, I just want to first just thank you for all the work you're doing, and it's just so important. Someone has to do what you're doing. And I would say this again, there's probably a cost to what you're doing, but you have a vision and it's really important. And I just really honor and respect what you're doing. The takeaway, I would just say, just remember that regulation first. If you can just remember, if I can regulate my nervous system in a healthy way, then all the other things you've been taught will fall into place for you. So regulation matters the most. And the thing that I love about the tappers is, I mean, you can use them hundreds, if not thousands of times. And so it's just something you can use over and over and over and 3-4 times a day. It doesn't matter. It's just, it's something you can use anytime you need it. And that's a really big deal.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, it's just, it's really, I'm kind of speechless, you know, you sharing that, you know, it's just something that I felt like was something that needed to be done. And there's a lot of other people out there that wanted to do something. And so I'm glad to give them an avenue and a way to really, truly make a difference. And for those of you who are listening, we have entered into a formal partnership with BiTAP. This is how much I actually believe in this product and what it does. It's not, you know, hey, if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you. I'm not saying go out and buy it, but I'm just saying, you know, there are resources out there that you can try to help you get back to having a more normal life. And that's really honestly what I care about the most, is making sure that you are okay and those around you that love you are okay. I would absolutely love to see the divorce rates go down, the substance abuse, and more importantly, the suicide rates. So if you do go check out BiTAP.com, make sure that you use the code BiTAP40. And what that does is it actually gives you a $40 discount off of the product, and it puts $10 back into Mind the Frontline to help support our initiatives and our peer support team. So make sure you guys do that. Support our partners. We really appreciate you coming on, Cindy.
I think, and Chris, I was just going to say, I think it's actually the code for you. It's just to make it more easy, is just Frontline 40.
Frontline 40, even better. Mm-hmm. So we'll make that correction in the edit, Michael. But if they don't catch it, I'll make sure I put that discount code also in the show notes, and it'll be going live on our members only resource page next week. So that way our members can take advantage of it. Cindy, we're really proud to have this partnership. And I do think what you guys are doing is impacting thousands of lives. And I think it's only going to get that ripple that you throw in that pond. Just, we never see how big that ripple goes and how far it goes, but I do think you are absolutely making an impact. So thank you to you and your partner for developing this product. It gives those of us on the front line an opportunity to help ourselves when we're not able to help ourselves, because literally we got a butthole driving in the driver's seat. So
well, but that's people can call too, Chris. I mean, if someone's like, I have more questions, just know you can email us at customerservice@bytap.com, or you can call 435-688-9047. And if you're like, I want to talk to Cindy, I'm more than happy to talk to you, just so that you can have if you just had more questions about it, like, we're very invested to help you.
Well, that's great. And that just speaks volumes to who you guys are and what you guys are trying to do, because I do think it's important to be available. There's a lot of companies out there that will sell a product and you can't get a hold of anybody if you have any more questions. I do know that we'll be posting some resources in our members only platform as well. So reach out to Cindy and her team if you have any questions, if you want some more information. They have a whole list of data and research behind this, and we are going to include it in the blog that comes out with this episode. So if you want more of it, either go to bytap.com, or you can also hop over to our resource page at mindthefrontline.org and get some more of that stuff. So as we wrap up in another enlightening episode of Critical Conversations by Mind the Frontline, we'd like to express our sincere appreciation and gratitude for Cindy for sharing your experience and your knowledge about bilateral stimulation, stressors, and more importantly, about the BiTAP device. It's been truly just enhances, I think, the overall mission of what we're trying to do to promote mental health and wellness and recovery for first responders. So with everybody else and our viewers and listeners, I encourage you to go ahead and hit like, hit subscribe, and go check out our partner BiTAP over at BiTAP.com. And thank you for being a part of the Critical Conversations by Mind the Frontline. Until next time, take care, stay strong, and mind the frontline. To our dedicated listeners, thank you again for joining us on this critical journey. Remember, the Critical Conversations podcast is a steadfast resource for police, fire, EMS, allied healthcare workers, dispatchers, air medical, and military personnel, along with their families. Your support makes the impact of these conversations resonate even further. If you found today's discussion enlightening and want to stay connected with our ongoing mission, please be sure to subscribe to the Critical Conversations podcast. You can find us via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and the Mind the Frontline website. Your subscription ensures that you will never miss an episode, and it's a powerful way to show your commitment to fostering resilience within the entire first responder community. For more information and additional resources, visit our website at www.mindthefrontline.org. Together, let's continue these critical conversations and build a stronger, more resilient first responder family. We thank you for being a part of the Critical Conversations podcast. Until next time, take care, stay strong, and mind the frontline.